welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Dr. Lara Greaves this morning. Kia ora, Lara, how are you?
Morena, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. It's nice to chat to you in the middle of a lockdown in a patch of bad weather. It's, you know, a bit tough up here in Tāmaki Makaurau at the moment. And I did want to start by having a bit of a chat about that. You work at the University of Auckland and you work with a lot of students. Students are doing it pretty tough at the moment. And we've heard that the University of Auckland in particular isn't going to be having on-campus lectures, regardless of the alert level, for the rest of this semester. What's some of the sort of feedback or responses you're seeing from students at the moment? Are people coping all right out there? It's a pretty tough time to be trying to learn.
Yeah, I think what we've got is a fundamental split within students where there are a group that pretty much the situation is fine for them. You know, they've got the stable, secure housing. They've got enough money to be able to get by food-wise and all of that kind of situation. They've got good internet connection. They've got a good setup.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a group of, anecdotally in my class, that seems to be like a solid quarter of the class, sort of. And then we've got that bottom third or quarter that don't have access to the things that they fundamentally need to be able to study.
Mm.
They might not have a device. Like, I've had students typing their assignments out on their phones. They might not have the secure internet access. They might not have a like quiet place to study because of household overcrowding.
Mm-hmm.
They might just not be able to do it because of like anxiety and other pre-existing things. That means that they've got other obligations. And so I think from what I can observe and what a lot of colleagues are observing is we're seeing this split happen where the people who, you know, had the things that they needed to study are doing as well or potentially doing better, right? And then the people at the bottom are doing worse and are not able to get to things. And, like, I think fundamentally in all of that, as academic staff, we definitely have to take things into account as much as possible, you know, have those quite low late penalties and do things like that we can to be able to help out those people. Generally, when I've gotten the university onto it, they've been really helpful. So
mm-hmm.
that's been quite a positive thing, like couriering out laptops and things along those lines. But I think ultimately the lockdowns and COVID are going to have an effect on education, and then that's going to have a flow through to equity and things like the public service and law and medicine and other sort of industries for years to come, and we're not going to know really the magnitude of that for quite some time.
Now, how should universities in general be, I guess, moving forward at this point? Because it's been, you know, a year now in Aotearoa of on and off alert level changes and changes to the situation for people studying. Should the universities be looking to bake into the way they run more contingency planning for crises like this?
Well, I think contingency planning from a range of perspectives is quite important because they have put in place contingency plans and they have said, you know, you need to be prepared to go online within 24 hours to us. They've said things like that to us. They have put in place, you know, some access to be able to get technology and those sorts of things. But I think what we need to recognise in sort of policies at the university level is like the just sheer range of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have liked to have seen the ability for students, even at this point in the semester, to drop their course and get a refund, for example, or a decent chunk of refund, because, like, in the students' minds, the terms of engagement in the semester have changed. So I would have liked to have seen policies like that in place, and potentially a grade bump, right? Because it's not necessarily that the grade bump has a huge effect overall in the end, but it does mean that students have that feeling of feeling supported by the university.
Yeah.
And the university, it's like that, there's always this joke in early career academia that it can't hug you back, but it can't hug you back. but it's nice for it to know that it's there and it's supportive and some of those things in place. But, I mean, it's just really sad because we are seeing that, like, huge range of experiences and tough things that, like, again, I can't discuss them for privacy, but some people are going through just horrendous series of life events that I wouldn't be able to cope with as someone who's a little bit older, a bit more scar tissue, a bit more resources behind me. And it's just, I just worry about, the flow-on effects to our professions from this.
More broadly, we're seeing conversations that have been percolating for a long time about how the way our tertiary education functions in this country, and basically since the introduction of student fees, how it's been increasingly more difficult for students to equitably access tertiary education. Chloe Swarbrick from the Green Party is currently trying to front a petition to get some more financial support and ongoing support for students when we do have something like a lockdown arise, because they seem to fall through the gaps a little bit in the welfare support from a government level that exists. Do you think we need to be having a broader conversation, perhaps at a government level, about how tertiary institutions are running at the moment?
Yes, and we actually see in that sort of more left-leaning policy space a lot of people bringing up the idea of a universal basic income as well. So people talking about, hey, you know, suddenly when there was COVID and a crisis, the government managed to find money, but actually the reality is we do have this sort of inequity in this crisis and inequality for our students. So I think fundamentally over the last decade, from what I've seen being around universities, and I think the data shows this, is that it's tougher for students to reach that basic level of functioning. So where we used to have a situation where like someone might have a day a week job, they now have maybe multiple day a week jobs, or they are piecing together financially. And so that's where the concern is, and I can see that's where the Greens and Forbrick are coming from, is that those students in various insecure professions that might fall through the cracks of the wage subsidy or might not necessarily know and fight for their rights there are struggling financially, and that may cause, you know, extra debt as well. So there's a potential for a lot of the people at the moment who are struggling financially to end up saddled with extra debt, which is not going to be great long term. And of course then, you know, a lot of people do end up with those good old crippling student loans. But I think that fundamentally during this time period, it is a really good idea to be looking at what people could be doing to support students. And it is that whole thing where it comes down to, if it is even just what is viewed at as a small or tokenistic boost, that still does create a better relationship between young people and government. And we have to also fundamentally turn around and be thinking about, hey, who do we need to get vaccinated and who are the groups that are going to be lagging in the vaccines? And that is younger people. So it's really thinking about what you can do and to create that positive relationship between government and those groups at this point.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about how the media has been reporting, particularly in this most recent outbreak. We've seen some quite significant changes, particularly when it comes to who and what parts of Tamaki Makaurau have been experiencing outbreaks of COVID. And I'm kind of talking about the racism aspect here as well. Mm. We've seen, of course, in the last week, the couple that went to Wanaka and broke the lockdown rules, and the reporting around that has been quite starkly different to how we've seen perhaps reporting around previous cases where people have infringed on some of the COVID restrictions there. What's your big takeaway from what we're seeing at the moment? Do you think there is some point at which we need to have a really serious conversation about how media reporting happens around issues like this?
Yeah, definitely. And media reporting of data is quite important in this, because we need to collect ethnicity data of the various people in terms of vaccine rates, in terms of where the outbreak is, right? So there was a really interesting discussion on New Subnation a couple of weeks ago about, you know, naming our Samoan church, that Samoa is in the church's name, but that community leaders wanted the ability to have been able to frame that and lead that from the start. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of quite an important point there, is where we do collect ethnicity or we do announce ethnicity, that the person who should be framing that discussion and leading that are members of that community. However, that being said, we never go to a Pākehā community leader when, say, the Wānaka couple have, you know, violated lockdown. We're not like, oh, who's the Pākehā community leader we should go to? And, you know, I was like, is someone going to go to Mike Hosking? But, you know, we don't do that. And so it's, that, again, that lens or that double standard there. But we do need to be collecting the ethnicity data, because we do need to know how Māori vaccine rates are tracking, and we need to know, you know, the things around risks for hospitalizations. So it is really coming back to, it's like, okay, so here we have some stats that show a certain percentage of a certain ethnic group have got COVID. We need to be thinking about ways that we can, I don't know, like educate media to report that, and educate media just generally around reporting statistics and studies, I think, is a really important avenue for future development in that profession. But yeah, that's just, it just totally comes back to, we need to have ethnicity information, but we need that ethnicity information to be treated in a respectful way that is productive rather than finger pointing. And I think one of the effects that it has is counterproductive on the COVID response, because if someone in sort of central Auckland, Pākehā, and say, I'll pick on Ponsonby because it's next door to me, but say if you're Pākehā in Ponsonby and you hear in the media, oh, it's Samoans have it, then that feels like there's like a level of psychological distancing, like a diffusion of responsibility, because you think, oh, well, my friends don't have it then.
So
even though actually that's not how that works, there were locations of interest all around Auckland, but that's the distancing, oh, South Auckland's all the way out there, it's far away from me. So that's also counterproductive for people listening to lockdown and feeling like the lockdown and the restrictions apply to them personally.
Mm, it's going to be an interesting one to see how we start to manage this going forward, because, you know, it's not a new thing how media reports, as you say, statistics and ethnicity data, but particularly when it comes to a crisis, it all sort of comes to a head in a different way. I did just
Yeah, there's definitely a generational shift there, though, I think, from what, you know, we can see through students and people, early career journalists coming through, but it's still then the sort of underlying thing of having to compete for clicks that can cause it sensationalism. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens in this sort of next generation of journalists coming through.
We're going to have to wrap up shortly, but I did just want to quickly ask you, are you seeing at the moment any holes in the support with this lockdown extension? Are you seeing any holes in the support for any particular groups that you think are not being perhaps looked after enough by what we have got as social supports right now?
Yeah, so if we look at what Brooke Stanley Powell and Janet McAllister, who are from Auckland, Action Against Poverty Auckland, and the Child Poverty Action Group, the kind of stuff that they're coming out with is, like, you know, focusing on people on those lower incomes, the students included in this, is that suddenly when you have people that are locked down, that they have to stay home, you have an increase in power bills, you have an increase in food bills a lot of the time, you have, because, you know, it's like for children who are getting meals in schools, is that increase. You have an increase in a whole bunch of other expenses that don't necessarily, for example, not specials in supermarkets at the moment, apparently. So all of those cost increases at that lower end of income have increased. And so those groups potentially are needing more support in this crisis. And fundamentally, if you want to get them, people to listen, like, money talks. So if you want to get everyone on board and if you want them to be part of the team of 5 million, I think you need people need to be turning around and looking at what are some of the financial things that could be put in place to help groups at the lower end of the income scale. And also going back to the wage subsidy that has operated on such a high trust environment and a high trust kind of model, yet when it comes to MSD or social welfare, it's still operating on that low trust model. So I think the pandemic has ultimately highlighted a lot of inequities and things that still need to be looked at under this Labor government, that still need to be looked at. And yeah, the income inequity, and whether it be students or whether it be like anyone, really needs to be continue to be looked at. I mean, house prices have increased this outbreak, so
yeah. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Dr. Lara Greaves. It's always great to have you on the show. I hope you're taking care in your bubble out there, and hopefully we'll be able to chat to you next time at a lower alert level. So we'll see you soon. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.